this special planning commission meeting. Today is Tuesday, May 11th, 2021. Time is 6:04 PM. We will proceed with the agenda. The first item is set aside for public comment. So here for public comment. Seeing none, then we move to item number three, which is approval of the minutes from February 23rd, 2021, and March 23rd, 2021 planning commission meetings. I cannot see anything concerning our bills. Any other commissioners?
One very long one.
Maybe the shortest meeting ever.
I will move that we accept our first minutes from February 23rd, 2021, and March 23rd, 2021 planning.
Second. Having a motion and second, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number four is review slash recommendation and public hearing on the concept of putting a plan approval for Shiny Shell Car Wash located at 10002 North 4800 West in SC1 Commercial Zone.
Okay. So the reason we're doing this concept at preliminary is because we've but Brian, based on some of the feedback you gave last time, I think that they took seriously the thought of what's located on the site, and they have, and I actually think that this site, in terms of location and proximity to the residents, is a much better site. I'm actually excited about this site. So let's dive into this. So this proposed site plan now includes a drive-through car wash with an adjacent lube center. You see the oil change center here, 2,000 square foot building. That will be adjacent to the Hearts, just south of the Hearts, on the Reinhardt Oil Land. One of the concerns immediately is with the flow of traffic relying on Hearts access points through two of them, there's going to need to be a development agreement granting access, at least on these two portions. This one is contiguous with the land that they're purchasing, so that one's not a concern, but it's these two westernmost access points. So they'll have to work out an agreement with the Hearts on that. The use of a car wash is a conditional use in the SC1 commercial zone in this sub-district that it's located in. The closest thing that we have to a lube oil is it's like a gas service station, but there is kind of a broad specific, there's a broad sentence there that says the most specific match for a given number should be used, and so I feel like it's probably the most apropos given that what's there. So I think that both of these uses are being considered conditional in this zone. On the parking, the parking is interesting. And I want to talk to, if you recall, back in, this is a while ago, I want to say it was January, and I haven't seen it maybe before that, but we talked about what is their other site look like. And so I actually went up to Murray to go look at their other site, and I appreciate the hospitality of walking me through their site. It's really interesting. But they have a few dedicated parking stalls on the site. I believe they have 9 stalls with 1 ADA access one, and then on vacuum stalls, there's 23 vacuum stalls with another one. So this is the Murray site. So this is the road you come off of, and you pull in here, and you drive through those vacuums, and then, drive straight through, and you come through this kind of a kiosk. Plus, it's really cool. It's license plate recognition, so it sees your license plate, lets you through, swing around, and then you come through the car wash, and then you come back. There's this uncertainty to the site. And then you have these car wash stalls, or the vacuum stalls here, and you can exit on to 900 East there. The really interesting thing about this site is that this is the property line. Where this says phase one, that's like the beginning of someone's home. Proximity to homes is really close. And I was really curious, so I took that decibel meter up with me, and they have their vacuums. They're all stacked, or there's 4 of them right here on the square. And when you're right in the middle of them, it's just screaming, it's like 95 decibels. But as soon as you walk outside of the proximity to vacuums, just to the property line here, it immediately drops to 70. So there's just a precipitous drop as you walk away from the backwards. And so this is just like the length of a car lane. So we're looking at like maybe 20, 30 feet. It's not very much. I think the exact distance here is 19.7, 26 feet here. So it's not very much. So if you look at that in comparison to the site plan here, with the nearest home being, you know, over here, this is the nearest home over here, with the vacuums being, I believe they're on this side of the building, so they're being masked by a couple buildings, landscaping, street, so the equivalent would be the vacuums being here and the nearest home being right here, which maybe isn't the case, but so vacuums, I think, that where they're located, in terms of mitigating that noise on the adjacent neighbors, is as well as you can locate those vacuums. Now, how they look from the street is another discussion where you can probably screen them with a brick wall or some sort of that. And the other thing on the parking is when I went up there, the employees up there actually do use the some of the vacuum stalls as employee parking. That may not be, I don't believe that will be necessary here, just given that on the site up there they had, I want to say, two, maybe three employees working. So you can park them here, you can park the oil change employees here, and move everyone to the site without blocking the stall. But if you did have to park an employee in the back of your stall, you have probably a back of stalls to use. So, I don't think parking is a terrible issue, or is an issue here. I already talked about the decibel levels of the Murray site. So I think with the proximity to the residents before, I know that was a concern. The new location, what concerns do they have about the noise levels?
Not in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the landscaping plan, let me pull up the landscaping plan.
I do have a concern about the back facing.
Can we talk about that? Just that they're facing.
Yes, but I mean, are there something that's blocking it, or are you?
Well, it's in cold here, you know.
Elevation?
Well, the elevation. I wanted to see the landscape and plan to get across the page. This is stuff. This is the landscaping plan right here. So, it's hard to see, but these touch points. Okay. I don't know if that's coming through right here, but here you see the vacuum stalls, and you have a tree line buffer between them and the stalls. I think the one concern I have with these trees there is that they are under power lines, so they want to plant a tree that's not going to be impressive for them in a few years. So there is some landscaping buffer between the trees and the vacuums. So I think that's a question for you. If that's okay, but if you feel like we need to revisit the way this site flows, I mean, they're going to be visible from somewhere. Landscaping bill, I will give them some feedback in an email about their palette. So I think they need to reconsider some of the types of trees, just that they come from our palette and make sure there's a couple of record find. So I'll work with them on that. And that's a simple fix, because we're using a few different types of trees.
I have a concern about the landscape of Longworth County. You know, a tree every 20 feet doesn't. It's beautiful, but there'd be some shrubs out there or something.
Out on the county?
Along that same line, along the tree line, along North County there.
We could ask for it to mask the matches.
That's my concern.
Maybe we could burn the instead, and now
well, you don't have enough, you don't have a ton of room there to berm it, and then when you berm it and then you plant the tree on top, then all of a sudden the power lines become a bigger issue.
Yeah.
So I think keeping the trees at grade, but I mean, if there are some shrubs that can be intermingled there at that ground level, there could be, I think you mitigate some of that impact.
So is there an awning over the vacuum basin?
There's not.
There's not?
No. Open vacuum arches that allow them to be visible. If I may, sorry. As you can see, I'm still a little wet in the ears. Still learning the ropes here. Appreciate your guys' time and consideration for our project. I do represent the owner, my name's Mitch Morris. I don't know if I can say that on the record, but the vacuum arches are just straight arches, as you've seen probably at a quick crack location or similar to Mr. Car Wash. And then per the landscaping requirements, we do have the trees every 20 feet. So we do meet that requirement, but in the commercial zone, it fits with the gas station to be able to be visible to the public road there. We do need our building to act as an advertisement, so to say, to be able to show that we are there and to be able to get cars off the street and to have functional business there. So
I would even maybe suggest holding this one up just to keep the third vision there.
No problem at all. Yeah. We will definitely revise what we're looking at.
So we can tweak the landscaping plan. That's a pretty easy fix. Any other talk? Any other thoughts on landscaping?
Well, I do have a question. I noticed there's a playground.
Yes.
So I've never seen a car wash with a playground. Tell me what this is.
Great.
What does it look like?
Yeah, no, great question. So at our Murray location, which Chandler came and visited, we do have a playground there as well. If I may. So our vacuums are actually, they were originally here, which is why I said yes, but now one is here, and one is here, and this is our playground area here, so we have to take the sidewalk to go up to it. There's no minimal crosswalking through the parking lot, not anymore than you can see at Walmart next door or the gas station. I would get along with the building, but I'm trying to reduce that. Playground is here, there's a members lounge here that we have a soda lounge there when we get
there's the burning of the
property. Yeah, we have a soda lounge where our members that have monthly passes can go in and get a diet coke. So we're sold or Dr. Pepper, that kind of drink is but yeah, good question. It's a unique experience for sure. Yeah.
Last time I saw this, there was not an oil change bay in there.
No, they've switched locations.
Oh.
So this is the last location is down by the funeral home, across the street from
yes.
The funeral home and the altar. They've actually contracted with the land immediately south of Hart's. So this is the Hart's gas station here, and
yeah.
This is basically all in between Taco Bell and Hart's.
There still wasn't an oil change.
There was not an oil change there, no.
So is this still going to be with Burger Shiny Shell, or is this going to be Gorilla and
no, it's a Shiny
Grease
Shell.
Monkey?
It is a Grease Monkey, but a
okay.
Shiny Shell. We have a partnership with John Fire, the Grease Monkey guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
How many employees will be working at the oil and lube?
Yeah. So we have the oil and lube. They on a max capacity day. They said they have 7 to 8 all throughout the day on varying shifts, so 5 to 6 at a time.
Sorry, and there's 3 bays there.
Correct.
And they're pull through. Chandler, remember 3 years ago when we said we could do bay doors, and now we're here again?
Here we are. Very amazing foresight, by the way.
Funny how that turns out. I'm sorry, I'm late for the record. It's Steve Thomas. I don't know that I'm voting or whatever.
Everyone's voting tonight.
Everyone's voting tonight. Awesome. What are the staff's concerns about this? Is there anything that's non-compliant?
We briefly just talked about the landscaping plan, which I think is just some minor tweaks between the preliminary and the final set, which is pretty easy. As far as, you know, you talked about parking, have you heard from parking?
Previously they were going to share some employee parking with vacuums, and they don't need to now.
Well, they still can, I guess, at the point. They have more parking than they did before, because this is also their parking up here for future reference.
Sure.
But anyway, they have the option of using the vacuums, and when I went to visit their Murray location, I saw that they do. So I feel like if that's their business model, that's up to them. But there's plenty of parking on site for staff and for patrons, so I mean, unless you get that installer who makes money for an hour to wash their car.
To that point, where would the overflow parking fee come from? Would come from like
There's three access points to this site, 1, 2, 3. These two are contiguous with the parts, so one of the concerns was before final, we'll have to verify some sort of development agreement with HARTS guaranteeing you access to that. So the flow of traffic would be you come in, you go through the kiosks, turn around, you go through the car wash, then you go to the vacuums, and the oil change out similar to the Serpentina at the Murray location, but just get the oil change added, or you can just completely go in these exits.
And this is just oil and lube, there's no mechanic shop or, you know, parking and major overhauls. It's you're going through. It's that day. You're not leaving your car.
Is there emissions as well?
It's a good question. I don't know if they do emissions or not, but it's the same day.
So we're not going to have taking apart cars, parking the parking lot with
all. Should not. No.
Yeah.
Got to ask.
So we talked about parking, we talked about the Murray site visit. One of the big concerns was the proximity to residential and the noise effect. I don't believe that is an issue here. I didn't see a clear lighting plan on here, so we'll want to see that to show where the side lighting will be. And just especially on this east side, just making sure that we're containing light onto the site and not spilling over. It's not necessarily terrible if it spills over the road, we want to keep it on site. And then the last concern would be signage. So we've identified on the elevations, on both elevations.
Is that wood or brick?
Brick. So on the elevations, I do have a couple changes I'm requesting on the elevations to the code. And then per experience we've had in the past is, you identified some signage locations, and we'll want to just quickly identify some of the other signage locations that are going to be on the building. So on the site plan, we'll want to see if you have a plan for a monument sign of some sort, we'll want to identify that on the map or on the site plan right now so that we can see that we're not blocking a clear vision area, because if we have a concern here with this tree, place it with the sign and have a bigger concern. So we want to just make sure we're keeping those site triangles open and visible, so just keep that in mind. Elevations of the building, or sign elevations of the building, we'll just want to identify where signage will be. And I think that's a pretty simple process between now and the final elevation. On the elevations though, I would recommend that we swap out the metal roof for architectural shingles, so it matches the, so it's more harmonious with what's already down there, and it's also in the code, so we need to do that. Second, on this lower soldier, of course, with white brick here, I would even consider that, every other building down there has kind of an earth tone on the bottom where there's either rock or there's some bigger bricks. It's not like a split-faced block, but it's like a tan type of look. So you have a red brick, and then you have kind of another earth tone on the bottom of the building. I would suggest making that alteration on the building to be more in harmony with what buildings are throughout that commercial zone.
That should be in the commercial design guidelines, right?
Yeah, so it just says using use of earth tones, and so that's why I want to swap out it's kind of white, like gray brick, or something else that's already received probably the demo. I know we're going to get some concerns and some questions.
Well, I have a couple of questions on the I want to call it windows. Yes, I'm talking about those. It's called out as LED backlit panels. And I'm very curious about what that means. Because to me, an LED backlit panel is a sign. And it's a functional definition.
Is it? Yeah, is it, are we looking like a, you talked earlier today, is this a Burger King sign on the side of the building that's just lit up all the time, or is this, I mean, I go through car washes sometimes, and they have like the neon lights, that might show the car wash better, so if you can explain what the back of the panels are.
Yeah, we actually are going to have the Super Bowl play all the way around there. Sorry, thank you. It's a very valuable question, I appreciate it. So the windows, they are actually a window, a frosted pane, and the LED strips are actually down at the bottom of the windows there to create kind of a glow effect there around the top of the building there. So those are variable colors when we can adjust to the requests there that are meant. So there's no LED screen by any means. It's just lighting, a lighting strip along the bottom there that's inside the glass.
Okay. So there's the, is there any image on the glass?
No.
Okay. And, color, so. And you can program the colors. Are we talking flashing, moving, running around, chasing each other, that kind of thing? Or is it more or less a steady?
Great question again, Adam. It's more of a glow. There's no running, no flashing. Currently at our Murray location, we have them almost on a pulse, a slow pulse of almost a 3 second here, and then it changes colors 3 seconds on. That's all it is. Pulsing.
Chandler, would that match the side ornaments where it's 9 seconds before it has to change or something?
That's how it works.
Right, but if I've got colors that are changing more frequently, that could be part of that was because it's a distraction, right? So people are driving by and it's changing colors and you're, you know, kind of head jerking over to it. Does it matter?
For what people are distracted for. I don't know. Because the idea with the 9 seconds was that, and it's been a few years, but it was that it's not so rough that it's changing as you're driving by, because 9 seconds you have time to read it before it changes again. But that was specifically for words, as I recall. In this case, nothing to read, and so I don't know that lights changing in that manner are too distracting. So that's just my take.
I don't know how the rest of the commissioners feel. My personal taste would just like it to be just solid green or white. But I know you're trying to make that, but I'm trying to have people's attention. But that's just how.
Honestly, if there's not a prohibition against it, I don't know that we could enforce any kind of restrictions on it.
I can look into the code if I feel like there's, this is what I wasn't prepared really to talk about, and it's here. So I'll have to look into the code, but I honestly don't have a clear answer whether or not. That's just my interpretation.
The reason that I feel this way is because I have neighbors who have changing lights all the time during the
I think it opens up some interesting possibilities. Turn red and green for Christmas, red, white, and blue for 4th of July, red, white, and green for St. Louis, Ohio. My concern would be the flashing or the animation. Those are absent, and it's a slow change. I personally don't have an issue with it. And whether that slow change is 3 seconds or 9 seconds.
And I can look into that as well.
I mean, either it's a sign or it's not, and if it's not, then it's not really regulated in itself.
But it's, to me, it's not a sign. It doesn't meet the definition of a sign. There's not a word to it. It's simply just lights on a building. And to that end, if I go back to the site plan, it's this end of the building. It's the west end of the building. Am I correct on that? It's not the east end. It's the west end. It's more towards this street. So, I mean, even then, it's still not close to the residents. So, I have neighbors with parents with crazy lots.
But there's going to be across the street neighbors soon. But although it's a different jurisdiction. We can torture them with our lights. It's fine.
What other questions are out there on the, maybe on the elevations as well? Oh, sorry, one more thing on the elevations.
Last time we talked about kind of the slant wedge roof, and then, so there is an elevation here that still has that, but it's going to be the...
This is the front. This is what you see from North County Boulevard.
And then the back half is just going to be a flat TPO roof.
Very boring. Yeah, so when Taco Bell came in, I recall that they wanted to do, they wanted to do kind of a steel look on the outside of the facade, and the council made them say, no, make it more organic. Remember that?
Yeah.
So here we've got kind of the same steel look. I would say that the feedback you're going to get from the council is going to be the same, saying rather than doing an industrial look of steel, give it more of an organic wooden type. Makes sense. So, I mean, an example would be we talked about across the street.
Yeah.
Wood? Okay. It's not a wood, but it just has that appearance.
I did notice, at least on the copies I have, that on sheet A2.1 and A2.2, the elevations are both labeled front and left side.
Here it says this is front, this is left. This is front, this is left, so it's not correct.
Yeah, and I'd appreciate it if it were labeled north, south, east, and west as elevation. As far as the window, those things under the car wash that aren't labeled, are those also backlit LEDs or are those actual windows of the car wash?
I apologize, I was taking notes on the northeast stuff. Good question, sorry.
The under the car wash, are those actual windows or are they again the backlit panels?
Yeah, those are actual windows, no LED lights or no lights there. It actually just looks into the car wash tunnel. You can see the equipment working on the
windows. Thank you.
Yeah.
Maria location actually had a little gun that kids had squirt in cars.
So aside from the things that are in the commercial design standards, that are going to have to be fixed before you'll approve it anyways.
Yeah.
Parking's good.
No, I
lighting plan, like there's, that'll come. Like,
I don't have any concerns. I mean, obviously there's, we're going to be bouncing back red lines between the engineer and the developers, getting those corrected, especially when it comes to attachment to the city services. But I mean, as far as the site plan layout's concerned, I don't have any concerns, you know.
Just the one clear vision corner there with the tree, maybe not.
Just as looking down the North County Boulevard, as cars are approaching rapidly northbound here, just keeping that tree out so that it's...
That does get kind of busy right there anyway, so if you got cars turning this way and this way, and that could get a little dicey. But
so, I mean, normally we try 45 feet.
Right.
You make a triangle here, it's 45 feet from where it connects, and anything in that triangle needs to be like below 3 feet.
Yeah. The engineer's not going to approve it without it, though, right?
Well, that's our standard. So I'm saying, well, that's our standard for inside Cedar Hills, mm-hmm. where you know the speed limit is 25 and everyone's going 30. But where everyone's coming up, approaching you at 45, 50 miles an hour, let's take this tree out so that you can see a little bit farther.
One question, if I may, Chandler. Sure. Well, similar there, just on the tree on the southwest corner. where there's everybody's coming out to talk to us. We want that one.
This one?
Yes.
No, because on this one, as I'm pulling out this way, I'm looking in this direction here. I'm not necessarily looking out this direction.
Mm.
We're looking for pedestrians, but I only need to see right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that one's less concerning.
I do have a question for the site plan, specifically the westernmost access. I see it's three lanes in, out, right turn. What's the width of that? It's not marked up here.
Good question. It might be on the, it's not on the site plan either.
Just seems a little narrow for three.
Like this is, it's on scale wise, it depends on how it's perfect, but if this is 10 feet for public facilities, we can see that each of these lanes is about 10 feet, so about 30 feet there. But it's not late, but it's about what it probably came out to. And as I look at it, there's also a tree up on this one here, and it's here now, especially where there's road beds in the back.
Okay, will we see this again?
Yes, sir. This is preliminary, so it's going to go to, for your recommendation tonight, go to the City Council for their preliminary approval, and it'll, when they incorporated some of these changes we talked about tonight, on the elevations, on the landscaping, and on the engineering, which I know we don't get too much into it with this body, but they'll come back for a final approval.
I hate to be a big things, but one, going back to the elevations, I think one thing that would improve the architectural interest in the building and matches up with other buildings in the area, particularly the Chase Bank and the Dollar Tree, Great Cliffs development. They all have pointing, and I think that would. Yes. It's a pretty simple addition, and I think it would add some.
But as this is right adjacent to Taco Bell, which then not.
That's right. So it doesn't have to be so. Yeah, I mean, it's in the Hearts. The Hearts has it, so it's a mixed bag.
That's true. One to five.
So.
I think we'll be the way on that. There is this that doesn't have
it. No, so that's just that one that shift. So it's about half and half. I've thought about that too, just in terms of adding some variation to the elevations, especially when you get to like this look right here. I mean, something to break up some of this. But, so, your call.
I guess I could go either way on that. For a car wash, which is. I'm okay with
it. Oh, I mean, also, there's going to be signage on the sides, whether it's there now or later.
Yeah,
there's going to be, it's going to break it up. Sorry.
It doesn't work on the side. Not on the top. Well, on the other side, we're going to have the windows into the equipment.
Well, you know, not on these corners here, but I mean, you could do it on these corners, probably the major corners around the building.
Yeah, good question. I believe we're flexible. We're happy to work with what's requested of us. I can't say I can commit to either way without speaking with buyers and firm, but we are flexible to the requirements and conditions in place of us. No problem.
I mean, as long as it conforms to our standards and, you know, they reasonably meet, like, materials requirements and that kind of stuff, that's all we're obligated to make them do.
Yeah.
And I think
we can throw out for consideration.
Yeah. Hey, but it is right right adjacent to Hearts. I really do like the way Hearts look.
So, and Hearts does have that other look that we talked about in terms of earth tones on the bottom.
Yeah,
so.
This one.
There you go. Dessert. Hearts has a flat roof except for they have a hitch on the front with shingles.
Yeah.
We're okay with those earth tones. I've made it up to change that as well.
So, any other questions on the site plan? We do have to do a public hearing on this.
Let's have a public hearing. Anyone here from the public to comment on item number four? That will conclude our public hearing. Any further discussion?
I'm happy to answer any questions from staff.
Do you have a question? Do they have any plans for the lot behind it?
Not yet, but I do want to talk about that later
tonight. Okay. I move that we recommend to the City Council a preliminary plan for the Shiny Shell Car Wash and Loop Station located at 10002 North, 4800 West, in the SC1 commercial zone.
Do you want to subject to the items we've talked about tonight?
We could, but there it's in the design guidelines to change the colors and everything anyway, so they have to.
Right. So that's it's subject to.
Yeah. So subject to conforming to the commercial zone design guidelines.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Aye.
Motion carries.
I request that we move item number 7 now.
Let's take item number 7, which is review action on concept plan approval for Cedar Hills Gateway subdivision lot 2, 3, 4, and lot 6.
Not lot 6?
No.
Lot 6 is there, but it's there.
Thank you.
All right, so this is what I'm excited about. So Charlie is, I'm with Charlie. So
that would be exciting.
I know they're working on lease agreements with three entities, and Charlie wants to get more information about that. It's free to do so, and so nothing's final, but the three entities are Beans and Brew, Cup Bob, and Cafe Rio. So it's a great thing. You'll see that the light on this is not going to be a problem. But there's three drive-throughs there, and. You know, the last year has been very interesting in terms of food eating establishments and how they serve their customers. And I was doing some reading in the last couple of weeks since I've talked to Charlie about this proposal about the need for drive-thrus in eating establishments. And I came across this interesting article and I'll just briefly share because I feel like it's correct. It says, just briefly, so restaurant construction is getting a quick pick-me-up from a wave of new drive-thrus being built during the coronavirus pandemic. So these eating establishments that had drive-thrus in the pandemic were well-established to continue to serve customers in some manner. So we have to talk about the McDonald's, and they were well-prepared to shift operations accordingly. It says, while overall food and beverage construction starts have plunged 27% year-to-date through July, this is August, what was published last August 2020. According to Dodge Data Analytics, starts at some chains that offer drive-thrus have actually gone up. So even though there's this pandemic raging, if you have a drive-thru option, it becomes more palatable to not only the customers, but to developers. And then this one was one that I hadn't thought of, but is actually really insightful. It says, in addition, drive-throughs, curbside pickup, or takeout capabilities are fast becoming a must-have design element for restaurant projects to get finance approval. So it reduces the risk as you start to incorporate what our world is like versus 2 years ago. Having a drive-through actually reduces the risk a great deal in terms of the success of the business. So I thought that was really interesting. I wanted to share that. So the concerns here is that, and this is just a concept, and so there's no public hearing. It's just giving me a thumbs up on the concept. And this is, again, if I say this every time, I apologize for the repetitive nature of it, but this is one of the few times when the Planning Commission gives approval. So they're coming with this concept plan and ignore lot six. So that doesn't exist. You have three lots. Taco Bell would be up here in the tabs, where they're driving going around on the north side of the building and coming out. This one, I'm assuming, would be coming in this way and moving up. And then the same thing here. These are both be circulating around the building towards North Capitol. Is that right? No, this one, sorry, this would be coming this way.
These are all within a few hundred square feet of each other. So does it matter which one goes where?
That's a good question. That's a good question because, you know, as we incorporated the Taco Bell, and, you know, people were really excited about the Taco Bell, and they lined up at the Taco Bell when Swig opened. People were really excited about Swig, and there was a line there. We had to work with Swig on their drive-through pattern. And so I assume that some of that same excitement is going to be with these three offerings. And so you're at a tricky balance here. That I think that drive, if you do want what people say they want in the city, because when the one thing people say they want is we want food offerings locally. And so here there are food offerings. But restaurants aren't looking at places unless there's a drive-thru. So you have to incorporate that into the site somehow. With that being said, I think a fair condition would be to say, with some sort of traffic study on some level, show us how this is going to work incorporated with the other entities that are there, and show us that it's going to follow up. I think that's the one concern. I want to bring that up in the concept plan so we can move this forward through the final plan. That's kind of the overarching, how is this going to impact overall flow of development? That's my one concern.
Flow and I think queue line.
Yeah.
Yes, when I talk about the traffic study, that's exactly what I'm talking about. We don't want queues stacking up in each other.
Not to relate to the horror stories, but just went through a development with a client in Spanish Fork. They required 13
stacks. And so, I don't know what the client was.
In and out.
We got 9.
I mean, I don't know if we do 13 here. That's an example of where
you're so, headed. And the interesting thing is, when you look at some of these drive-thrus, and they get really long. We have Chick-fil-A anywhere right now. I know the, it's one of the Myers. Great place.
Fizz,
yeah. I mean, they're serpentining around that whole parking lot. I know that the other entities there are just super frustrated.
Yeah, they make them go so all the way down to the end of Myers and come around.
We're not queuing this up in a way that, you know, blocks all these other businesses. So how this all flows, I think, is going to be a matter of discussion throughout this whole project.
That's a yeah. I mean, we're getting ready to have this massive influx of housing units across the street.
Right, I'm talking about there's not a grocery store right here.
They were blocking.
It's there, and then this is coming in and blocking their entrance. That's what I'm saying. But yes.
And there's with not any frontage entrance either. Is there? On 4800?
No, you're coming in off of, right?
And so, and that's whatever they.
We don't want an access point there either.
No, I didn't say we did.
Okay.
So that road that comes in. Was south of lot six.
This one?
No, the one in the middle, sorry. So that could be some of that drive through extra capacity, is there's three or four cars that can go in there in the entrance. And
so yeah, on this one, so let's talk about lot three. You have the ability to, I mean, it frustrates people here. You can stack this way and then wrap around and go around and then out, right? This one you can stack, and this is the menu board, you can stack through here and then back, but then you're starting to run into each other. So I don't know if you try to shift the window to here, the menu board here, and stack as many as you can as in that queue. I don't know which entity is going where.
Well, it's trying to have them all built simultaneously so that they can be initial. That's the same kind of queue lines would be, you know how Swift was. It was way down into Warm Pine Boulevard and everything. Yeah. So if they were not finished at the same time, if the big surge happened first.
I would be surprised if all three of them.
That'd be some spot on planning if they have got all three of them. back to your high level ideas about the change of restaurant flow, and so you kind of got the gig economy stuff, the DoorDash and all of that have to have places to come and get the food and get out of there as quickly as possible. You may have delivery drivers that are actually employees doing this too. Yeah. You've got drive-through. Is there any dining in any of these? There is. Is there also walk-up? Something I've noticed because of Corona down here at McDonald's especially, is with it being across the street from the high school, which these sort of will be too, there's a lot of walk-up traffic. There's a lot of kids that walk through, and that, like, having them walk through the drive-through with big trucks who can't see over, you don't want that. So that may be a consideration here as well, as, you know, there's some, and we don't have any control over this, but there's some digital ordering aspect where people can walk up and then a pickup window that isn't necessarily tied to the drive-through.
Well, I think most places do. I mean, I think about, Obed is in Pleasant Grove. Does not drive, but the gig economy, these DoorDash, Uber Eats drivers, they walk in, it's set up for them to quickly go pick up and walk out. And a lot of restaurants I'm seeing now, they actually post signage for those drivers specifically to be able to just quickly park, get in, and get out.
Well, so if there's a queuing issue, there needs to be a place for them to get in and out outside of the queuing. So that those are just a couple of things to think about. In concept, it's great. Everybody wants more options to eat all the time. So I think that's cool. Like you mentioned, this is more complex than a drive-through and/or sit-down restaurant used to be. There's three other businesses essentially running in it. The gig economy, be able to walk up people, and you know, all of this is, it's just different. And the online ordering people. So you're queuing orders. Not in the drive-through or the walk-up that were ordered online that aren't, you know, there's, yeah. It's really like, seriously, running five different businesses.
Yeah, so it's, you got to balance here. And so, I mean, on this proposal right now, we're talking about a concept plan. So we're saying, you know, based on what I'm hearing, I'm going to read the tea leaves here and say we're giving this a go-ahead. But there's some things that we've got to consider along the way.
Yes.
So hi, Charlie, the whole shop. I think I've met most of you before. Good to see you again. One thing I did want to point out that all three of those buildings, they will have other tenants in there as well. So they're designed to be a multi-tenant building. So with what we call the end cap with drive-through. So for example, if you look at, I'll use the Lot 3 building there, that building is about 4,000 square feet. So we're talking to Cafe Rio right now, we're really close to a deal with them, and they would take 2,500 feet of that, 4,000 feet, so that would leave about another 1,500 feet, which is really about the size you want. It's a good size. It's not too big. It's not too small for another tenant. That could be one not sure, we're talking to some people right now, but it could be another food guy. It could also be, there's lots of other retail uses as well that would be. So, and that's really what we're driving for, to be honest with you. We'd like to mix in some other retail other than food. We just think it's a good mix. And it's also easier on the parking as well. You know, food guys, they tend to just kill your parking. So there will be other tenants in all of those buildings. At least one other tenant. In the lot two building, there may be three tenants there.
What's the square footage of that building?
That is about 4,600 feet, roughly.
29,000.
Oh, that's probably the lot size.
Oh, okay.
The building's 4,585.
Yeah, so it's about 4,600. So really, the design on that, even whether it's a cup-off or a beans or a cup-off, we're not horribly excited about. We think we'll get a better user that we like better. But a user like them, they're like a 1,700 square foot user. Beans and Brews is the same way. And so that leaves room for some other tenants there. So to answer your question, yes, there will be dining. They realize that there's a high school across the street. They realize that there'll be a lot of walk-in traffic. So it'll be designed to accommodate that.
I've just seen packs of kids going through the drive-thru at McDonald's with cars all over the place, and it terrifies me.
That's terrible. Two things to that is, with the opening of the Canal Boulevard, you're going to see a lot more traffic to our area, going out of our area, so it's going to flow on that. I think, and then
Steve,
the development of
that
land south of Polk High School, I mean, there's 800 units going in there. So it's a major development. So all of a sudden, we are opening up. There's a bunch of people are looking at commercial opportunities. They're looking at counting rooftops and saying, okay, how far can you get in 5 minutes? And that road opens up, and you've got housetops there that you can get on too. So all of a sudden, our corridor is becoming more and more optimal, which is a good thing. But then something else to consider, when you have multiple tenants like this, we're approving the building, and as long as the use is, if the use is a permitted use, or a conditional use, if it's allowed in that zone, it's not coming back to you for approval. So for example, in the Amsworth property, you may have noticed that the Happy Dragon is opening up. It's a Chinese restaurant. Well, that never came to city council, that never came to planning commission, because that's in a use that's approved in that zone. So staff, we just approved it. There's no need for it to come to this body. So as we're approaching these discussions, some of these other tenants, we may get excited about the initial tenant, but we're not approving it based on the tenant itself, but on the use. And then if the use on the adjacent property or the other use in the building is conditional or permitted, you won't see it come back to you then either. So just something to consider.
So based on that explanation, what are your concerns? Are there any non-conforming uses here? From what the way it's proposed, from the building, from the parking?
No, my only concern is traffic. That's it. So it comes down to it. And I bring that up early in the process, just because as we talk about this, I mean, this site plan could be sufficient as it sits right now, as it stands right now. But we'll just want to explore that and probably talk to some of their assumptions. So if it is a cap area, we want to look at a cap area and say, well, how many cars can you process in an hour? What's your typical queue look like? And see, are we prepared for that type of demand?
So another thing that we're not going to, hopefully, this is not going to be a Charlie thing, but this may be a working with the new developers across the street. There's not any good pedestrian access to our business district from the new buildings that will be there, from the high school. And there is a crosswalk, but it's not super safe, I wouldn't say. Is there any way to do a pedestrian-friendly, bridge or tunnel or anything like that?
I've actually had conversations with
people about that very thing.
Because there's the Murdoch Trail has one just down the street, but it's not.
But so the short answer, yes. Does it have a lot of legs? No.
Okay.
But that conversation has been had. Because you're asking a good question, and one of my big concerns with that development, and we're way off topic, I apologize, but one of my big concerns with that development over there going in is you have 800 houses. Where are those kids going to go to school? They're going to go to our schools. And they're Highland kids crossing a state road. I don't want to pay for a crossing guard for that, so I'd love a bridge.
Yeah, and just as it is now, I see kids running across the road, even at nighttime, things like that, which is, that's their prerogative. If they want to do that, they do that.
That's nothing to do with this right now.
It doesn't, but as we bring in these types of hopefully pedestrian-friendly walk-up shopping and dining, we make sure that these other developments consider that and maybe do things to make it work better. Again, this is not a Charlie thing.
We can try. So so as we develop this property, we look for the walkability aspect. You have a sidewalk here, you have a sidewalk here, there's a sidewalk here. People can walk to this from Cedar Hills. As it pertains to North County Boulevard and Highland, we can raise some concerns, but hopefully they find yours.
I'm okay with this. Again, like you said, traffic, everything conforms to the commercial district.
To speak to the traffic, just for a minute, and I agree, a traffic study would be, probably be wise. But we have worked with, it'd probably be helpful for you to know, but we've worked with several of the tenants. Kent Rio probably being the driving force on that, because we think they'll draw the most traffic. But they like the site plan the way it is. We've gone through several iterations to get to where we are now, and that's just to please them, pretty much. So, because they're not going to come if they feel like their stacking lane isn't sufficient, or that they don't have sufficient parking, or that the traffic doesn't flow well. So a lot of that is some that's market driven, to where Margaret's going to answer a lot of those questions, whether or not you can.
I'm glad the car wash it, so that this can be possible.
Yeah, it's all mine. That's another discussion. But anyway, so that's a good point. This is, like I said, a review action for the Planning Commission. Are there any other concerns with this proposal?
No, other than the traffic study.
Is there going to be a street? You know how there is between lot 2 and 6?
Right here?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a private street.
Right, okay, so it's just like.
Yeah, so it, like, where this is a public road,
yes.
This is not. This is basically like, it should have the feel of you're entering the parking area.
Right. Like, just like when you go into Highland, Whitney, Fizz,
yes.
Myers.
Yeah, you kind of know you're off the public street, you're a bit more
okay.
All right. I'm good to go.
Does anyone have a motion?
I'll do it. I move that we approve the concept plan for Cedar Hills Gateway lots 2, 3, and 4, subject to a traffic study.
I'll
second. Can I note that Tyler Moore voted for the
motion? Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Looks like you're going to do a traffic study, Charlie. All right, that takes us back to number 5, which is review/recommendation and public hearing on concept, preliminary and final plan approval for a 2-lot subdivision located at 9990 North, 4000 West, in the R1, 20,000 rural residential zone. I normally don't like doing concept and preliminary and final all at once, but this is pretty simple. This is a 1-lot subdivision. This is up by the fire station. This is Cedar Hills Drive, and we have 4000 West right here. And so there's an existing house on this property. They're subdividing it down the middle. My grandson's purchasing the property and hoping to build a home on here. There's, I say it's simple because normally we have a subdivision commander say, okay, where's the water lines going, where's the sewer, where's the PI? It's all just there. It's almost like this is a blank lot that he's tapping into. There's already utilities in the road here. He's simply just bringing in some lines and those are showing up there. Bringing in a sidewalk at this point, bringing in a ADA ramp so that people can get go along the sewer sidewalks. I'm not having him do sidewalk on this side, just not recommending it. And the reason for that is that this road is in need of major repair at some point. Most of the homes there, well, half of the homes, I should say, are on septic tanks. Some of them are old mill water customers who are Cedar Hills residents, but maybe on Pleasant Grove Water at this point, Pleasant Grove residents who may be on Cedar Hills Water. So when this road is going to be redone, it's not going to be a small project, it's going to be a big project, and it's going to be a matter of sorting out some of these issues of water, installing fire hydrants along this lane, and...
Done it? The corner one?
That's it. And so we didn't want to put in some infrastructure that we're likely going to figure out. So that is a project. So we want to see that be installed here. We drive up different along here, we want to go along this corner, so we're excited about the fact that that's going to open up. Because again, if we talk about clear vision areas, this is not one right here. So we're excited about that one being taken care of. It's a pretty simple. Subdivision. I know I met with a resident who was concerned about that sidewalk issue, and I explained that to her. As we move into the sidewalk, and I'm not even sure that the sidewalk is down here. It's not even in Cedar Hills. This is a puzzle. This is another part of the problem is that hopscotch between Pleasant Grove and Cedar Hills as you drive down this road. And one minute you can be in Pleasant Grove and Cedar Hills, and back in Pleasant Grove and back in Cedar Hills. It's the weirdest thing. But so there's got to be some interlocal cooperation on this project when that eventually happens. And I've talked to their engineer about it. I know it's on both cities' radar, but it's going to take some cooperation.
So there will be an easement then around that to it?
Yeah, so there's still you can see it here, there's still a 10-foot public utility easement, and that's behind where the sidewalk will go. So, on this one, this is probably a better layout. You can see the sidewalk will come in more up here, and then you'll have a property line behind the sidewalk, then a 10-foot utility.
So are there any concerns?
No. This is pretty easy.
The new lots will fall.
Yeah. It's an R1 20,000 zone, so it has to be 20,000 square feet. You can see he's got 25,635 square feet, or just over half acre. He's got enough way by far enough space to put the home on there. There's really no concern. It's fairly simple. If it were more complicated, I would slow this one down and say let's do the preliminary, work out some of these issues, and come back with the final. But honestly, it's almost like there's just a blank lot that just needs a house on it. So it's pretty simple.
You ready for motion?
Yeah.
Please.
I move that we recommend the council of concept preliminary and final plan for the Smith Walker subdivision located at 9991 North, 4000 West, in the rural residential R1.9.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
We needed to actually do a public hearing on that as well.
Right.
Sorry.
Let's go back to public hearing.
Erase that.
Undo that.
Should we come to
life?
Just
for something highlighted on the agenda. It's a good thing we had that public hearing.
Yeah. I'm representing.
Could you say your name?
Absolutely. My name is Willow Becker, and I'm representing the community that's around this parcel. And we just wanted to verify, because none of us got these flyers last time, we just want to verify this will remain zoned as an R, whatever,
yes.
R1, yes,
Yes, so again, it's just splitting the lot.
Yes, so you, yes, let me just be very, very clear so you can think back to your neighbors, because I appreciate you being here. You have a lot here that's about 1.5 acres in size, maybe 1.3 acres. You're splitting the lot into grants and putting a home on that second lot. That's going to be a half acre. So it's not, there's no zone change. You'll just see a new home on that twice and a half.
That is totally cool.
No car wash there.
No, so it's like I guess if it were that, or anything more than that, yeah, we wouldn't be this.
Let's close the public hearing. Okay, let's redo the motion.
Okay, I'm sure we recommend to City Council the concept for Lundaring final subdivision of, I don't have a state of the Walker.
Smith Walker
subdivision located at 9991 North, 4000 West, in the R1 20,000 zone. Residential zone.
Is there a second?
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Next item also has a public hearing, so we won't miss this.
Oh, man.
Can I just start with the public hearing on this one?
Sure. Item 6 on the agenda is review, recommendation, public hearing on amendments to Cedarville City Code 10-5-32 and 10-2-1 related to accessory dwelling units. Is there anyone here for the public comment? I will close our public hearing. And I guess we'll have a staff
report. Yes. So this all stems from changes to state law that were made in this past legislative session. And let me give you some backstory that these laws that the state has passed came into effect on May 5th. So we're playing a little catch up here, but trying to get this incorporated. But by and large, are the accessory, we used to call the accessory apartments. So any reference to accessory apartments, conforming it to state code or changing it to accessory dwelling units. So ART and ADU, so just if I use some nomenclature, forgive me. Our code that we passed, I want to say it was 4 or 5 years ago, by and large actually follows what the state is mandating throughout the state. There's a few changes that we'll go through. But I feel like the city really, when we were drafting that code years ago, I think we did a pretty good job. So in HP 82, the state legislature made these modifications that, as I mentioned, are now effective. But the staff is recommending that the Planning Commission following changes. So, and some of these are already in, but if you had the time to read through the proposed code, what we're doing is maybe making some language more explicit in what we're trying to say, and then adding some of these provisions that the state now requires. There's a prohibition on the secondary utility meter that requires ADUs to be designed with, does not change the appearance of a single family dwelling. Pretty much had that, but they may have changed some of that language. So it's not having, it means not adding the front door of the ADU or the next to the adjacent front door, so it looks like a duplex. We do have a couple in the city, but it's a little too late for it. You can require a primary dwelling. You can require, and this is the one that was the most controversial in this state, is that you can only require one off-street parking spot. And this is kind of a win for cities because originally it was no off-street parking stalls. So this was a point of contention between, I want to say, every city in the state this last legislative session. Replace any parking spaces lost by the conversion of a carport or garage into an ADU. So if you change the garage into an accessory dwelling unit, you have to make up for that covered parking somewhere else on the property. So it's not just changing out the garage, it's not that simple. We can require a permit or a license. We do require that they be registered with the city. We don't require them to pay an annual license renewal. But we do, for purposes of our general plan and reporting our moderate income housing in the city, we do require that they be licensed through the city or at least registered with the city. We can prohibit ADUs within 25% or less of the total area of municipality zone for residential use. Back in the day, when we decided where ADUs would be allowed, we allowed them in every zone. Now, we can prohibit them on certain lot sizes, and that's one of the next items is that you can prohibit them on lot sizes that are less than 6,000 square feet. So they're already prohibited in the David Weekly PD1 subdivision. So they can't be there. None of the, there's only like one lot in that subdivision that actually would meet that 6,000 square foot requirement. Every other one of them is under, it's the corner lot. Every other one of them is under 6,000 square feet, so it doesn't meet that provision anyway. We do have other areas in the city. You have Temple Shadows, Bridgestone, Falcon Ridge up here where the townhomes are on the hillside, where they also would not meet the 6,000 square foot requirement for a lot or to put a single or an ADU. You can prohibit the ADU if it's not the primary dwelling, so it basically has to be owner occupied. And then if you find a compliant, if you find a non-compliant property, you can hold a lien against the property. That is outlined in state code references. So if you had a chance to read through this, I'd love to have a conversation with you if you have any questions about it. It feels honestly like, it's not like it is, the state is forcing the hand of municipalities in this case. Each year at the legislature, there's always a discussion on a few topics. There's always a discussion on water, there's always a discussion on sales tax distribution, and there's always a discussion on housing. And housing discussions are getting louder and louder and louder each year. And it feels like you're kind of reaching a crescendo at this point with the lack of stock in the area and the inability of people to buy houses. You know, and this is the problem that we have in Cedar Hills is that we've become more and more affordable. So where we have to report, we have to report our affordable housing each year, it becomes less and less likely that we meet some thresholds established by the state. And that's just honestly by virtue of kind of how this community sits. There's not a big commercial center. I know we have some commercial, but we don't have a big commercial center where lower income families can live adjacent to it. We don't have transit or any public transit that comes through the city. So it's not like you can, we're not very open to people that don't have their own form of transportation. And so there's some real limitations on the way our community sits in relation to maybe what the state expects. So the challenge is that the state really approaches this with a one-size-fits-all scope, and it just doesn't work that way. And so even though I know we don't have enough affordable housing according to the state, there's just not a whole lot that as a city we can do about it. We can put out, we allow ADUs, but if you have an ADU in your house, I can't tell you what you can charge for the rent. So as a city, we're doing what we're trying to do what we can to comply, but that's about it.
So the ADU, detached units have to meet the accessory structure requirements.
Correct. Now on the ADU, the parking on it, the state differentiates between an internal ADU and an external ADU. So yes. On an internal ADU, you can only require one off-street parking stall. On an external ADU, the code as it's written still requires two.
And that's okay,
for
the state?
That's okay for the state, because they're internal, they limit one to an internal ADU.
I have noticed also the definition for ADU was, I mean, I remember talking about this ordinance dwelling, all this that's crossed out on 6-8. So now it's just a habitable living unit added to, created within, or detached from the primary single family dwelling. You don't have to specify that it has a separate heating and hygiene. Okay. Just wondering, that's the state changing that. And then also on the memo down on the background and finding, this was something that was a little confusing to me. The second from the bottom, it says prohibited ADU if not the primary dwelling.
Basically owner occupied.
Right.
So if this is your primary dwelling and you live here for 9 months out of the year, but 3 months you live in St. George, you're sober, this is your primary dwelling. And you can rent out
your secondary dwelling.
But if it's your secondary dwelling,
then
you can't rent
it
out.
Okay, I got it.
Well, you can't rent it out as an ADU, or you can't rent it out?
You can't rent it out as an ADU. You can rent it out, but not as an ADU. You can't have a separate ADU in that. So if I lived in Cedar Hills and I hadn't an ADU, and I left to St. George from, November to March, at some point the city's going to have to say, where's your primary dwelling? And if I say St. George, I can't occupy that ADU with somebody that's not And that's not related to you by the family.
Is that a bird? Or a ball?
I noticed this is not code. I was just like, that was just ambiguous to me. I thought, if the ADU is not the primary dwelling?
Sorry, and a lot of that language comes directly from state code.
Okay.
Sorry, there are provisions in this that I really don't like, specifically with parking. I feel like that's going to open up a complete mess in a lot of areas, in not just our city, but every community, especially when it comes time to plow a road. So I imagine that, I hope that at some point the legislature takes out a look at some of these provisions.
The city is going to stick with that,
going to
have to be enforced.
Yeah, no, and the city is still going to enforce the parking on the road because we have to plow the roads.
Right.
So we have to be more strict on some of these cars that we see repeatedly in the right of way. We try to be very lenient, but if the plow can't get around, then we're going to get in trouble.
What is the purpose of the lien?
Is that a fine? Yeah. So it's like a tax lien.
So, but it doesn't keep
community. No. And so this is also how the city's going to approach some of their code enforcement. When our code enforcement currently in the past, we've just tacked it onto a utility bill. But I don't like that. So what we're doing is we're moving towards a property tax lien. So if you've been issued a violation and you expire due process, run out of appeals, are issued a fine, you have a certain amount of time to pay it. If you don't pay it, I'm not going to stick it on your utility bill and shut off your water, or just file a property tax lien. The same thing.
And then if you don't pay it again, then you just take the house,
right? You take the house.
I mean, that's kind of how that works.
Seems extreme for a $35 fine, but yeah.
Is it correct?
Probably not. I don't want to be overly punitive on this. And in fact, when it comes to ADUs, we've never really taken a draconian approach on these. We've really tried to, since I got here, we've really tried to take an approach of we want to create an environment where you feel like you can come to the city and register your ADU. Maybe eight years ago, there were requirements in the city that you had to pay impact fees on your ADU and you had to meet some pretty strict building requirements in terms of basically making your house a duplex. And I think the city did a good job in terms of how to incorporate enough changes to make it a safe environment, but to make it feasible for people to retrofit their houses and feel comfortable coming to the city and registering those. And so the state's actually adopted pretty much all of those same building standards. So, you still have to have a second form of egress out of the bedroom. You still have to have special outlets. You have to have smoke detectors. You have to have a railing. So it's a minimum standard that you have to meet. But one of the standards that I felt was onerous was you had to have separate ductwork for the primary dwelling and the ADU. And retrofitting a house with, a secondary AC furnace and then running that ductwork, I felt was just a little bit too burdensome if you're going to really try to get people to register those. Years ago, I fought really hard to say, no, let's leave this out. And internally, I thought it was a challenge, but I felt like it was the right decision. And that was one of the decisions the state made, was that you can share air systems inside the house. So I feel like we did a good job here. So there's still some minor modifications we have to make here, but I think overall the city's on the right track when it comes to accessory dwellings.
Discussion?
I read through the proposed amendments and didn't see any problems with them.
Tell Jenny we missed her.
Me too.
She's usually the one that does this.
I know. She's
I move that we recommend the proposed amendments to Cedar Hills Code 10-2-1 and 10-5-32 related to accessory dwelling units, subject, actually there's no subject. Good to go.
Our second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item seven, review.
Oh, right.
Excuse me. We did, sir. Eight, discussion on city code 10-6-8 related to landscaping and current uses in commercials.
I know we talked about this before, but I talked to some developers about the 30% requirement. And they're okay with leaving it at 30%, but if you recall with the Gateway project, we went with this shiny shell because they require the Gateway Center. We have that half acre retention basin, and we're saying if you help us upgrade this, we'll count that portion towards your landscaping part of 30%. So that's why you'll see 23% on the shiny shell, you saw 23% on Taco Bell. And some they like the idea of saying, well, is there another place that we can maybe put some of this money to upgrade some landscaping to reduce the amount of space we're having to dedicate for landscaping on our property? So is there a way to say the threshold is now 23% and we're going to give the city money to plant other trees in the commercial zone, or we're going to plant give money to the city to do other duplication efforts in this area rather than just on our existing site? So I thought it was a worthwhile discussion, and I wanted to bring it to you to hear your thoughts.
But when I was reading this, the question I had was, as far as maintenance goes, so there.
It'd be on city property.
So it's city property, so that's just the improvements.
Yeah, so I'm hesitant to add more grass areas.
Well, I was thinking if they said about 30%, we were willing to get 1% annual maintenance, or something, if they provided that, or is it only?
I think they're looking at one-time fee. They're going to make more time fees so that they can reduce the amount of land that they have to landscape, right? But it also reduces, I mean, if you have a 9-acre commercial zone, which is what we have in the Gateway, and you have to carve out 3 acres of it for grass and trees, then all of a sudden your commercial options become very limited. So that's really kind of what they're looking at. If they want to maximize their ROI, it really comes down to that on their purchase of land. So I thought, hey, you know what, this is a worthy discussion. Is this something that we want to entertain?
This happens in other cities, sorry.
Okay, possibly, but I just like where else
the
city would
decide.
Yeah.
Well, I mean it could be people look at this right about when driving here. It needs some love. Maybe it's a matter of, hey, look, I'm buying a couple of nice bigger calico trees to plant on that roundabout. In terms of water conservation, the city's looking at various options of, hey, where, this is it. So we're looking at some various areas of where can we reduce our grass, but also maybe make improvements to the city. So we inevitably, during the summer, the city's gonna get calls saying, why are you telling us to water, but you're watering this park strip, this building of the road? Well, what if we took that park strip that's in front of Charleston, it's just grass in the middle of the road, and we made that pavers? That would be, A, we don't have to maintain it, we don't have to water it, it's not useful grass, but you can put pavers in a way that make it look nice. And it's just a small section, it's not something that people are going to have a big pick on. Maybe that's an upgrade. You know, on the south end of town, there's that red rock that says welcome to Cedar Hills. Well, across the way there's another little grass section there. Maybe it's a matter of taking that out, paying for the takeout of that, the removal of that saw, and we upgraded that to rock to match what's on the other side. Again, reducing our maintenance obligation, but in some manner making a beautification effort in the community. Those are just a couple ideas. It can be anything, really.
You don't want it to be a subscription fee where we're getting revenue out of it?
I think they would hate to have anything else.
I'm not saying they would.
Cost that they would have to maintain their own.
That'd be a recurring cost.
Hard anyway.
I think it'd also be hard to.
I'm teasing.
Is there a thought of having a centralized green space within these zones so that rather than having you have to have 30% on purchase, there's a centralized green zone within the zone, and that you have to.
But well, the code does allow for parks, plazas, fountains. It's this you know, this grandiose vision of what this could be, but I mean, quite frankly, we don't have the space for something like that, so it seems like the vision exceeded the reality quite a bit. So you do have this half-acre retention basin that's right across the street from, if you just went just east of the proposed car wash, there's this green, there's this grass retention basin. It could be as simple as, hey, let's plant some trees on this to, you know, give it more of a boulevard feel along 4700 West. It could be a number of things, and I would probably put the burden of coming up with an idea on them to be proposed, or to be proposed something to be approved by the Planning Commission and City Council. It's part of their landscaping efforts.
So, yeah. So do it on a case-by-case basis?
Well, establish. I want to establish a rule. But then that rule, I want them to come up, if it's a, it could even just be donate, like whatever you're short, come up with a fee that is, whatever you're short, you donate money to the city, and then we do the beautification efforts. Like it could be, that's why I say this is a discussion on whatever you guys feel more, most comfortable with.
I'd be more comfortable with the city saying, here's the fee. And if you want to reduce it by 3%, here's what that
yeah. Well, and I think it's a matter of coming up with a dollar per square foot amount, because that's how it's going to be calculated.
Yeah, I have some heartburn with, not with the idea, not with the concept, but I think we have to be really careful about implementation, otherwise
yes.
It's going to be arbitrary, capricious, and backdoor deals, favoritism,
yes.
All kinds of problems.
So I completely agree. That's why I wanted this to have this discussion tonight. I will draft something. I will run it by our attorney because cities can make exactions, but they have to fall within the rules established by state law. And so there has to be a formula and a purpose for it.
And
so portion. And portion. So I think that's where the formula comes in.
It sounds like torture when you say exactions.
It does. But there has to be some methodology here. And you're right. It can't just be, okay, plant a tree on this. I'm just giving you some examples of where the efforts would go. Because on one end, you want the developers to have something that they can rely on, saying you can either landscape 30%, or you could go down to 23%, and that other 7% can be paid for on a square footage basis into this fund that the city then goes and does beautification efforts throughout the community. And keep in mind, this is not something that's going to go on in perpetuity because we're running out of commercial land. There's only a little bit left. So I would look at more permanent beautification efforts rather than saying, oh, we got some money, let's plant some annuals. Okay. That's not very smart. Right? So
isn't there a parks and trail?
Yeah, and I mean, that can go into their annual budget to saying, okay, here's where we're going to use this money. One project that someone's been in my ear about for years is as you drive down Canyon Road, and you're going to pay attention to this now, is if you look onto the west side, there's a fence right across the street from the city building. It's a stone wall. And if you look between the sidewalk and the wall, there's just weeds. So maybe it's a matter of planting, or not planting, but a matter of like putting down fabric and putting some decorative rock there. I mean, there's projects in the city that this can be put to good use, but I completely agree with everything you're saying, that there has to be a rhyme and reason, and it has to be defensible if somebody says, whoa, I'm not doing that. It's exactly.
So, and I think the other thing is there has to be a limit. Like, it can be that.
There's a ceiling of 30%, and there has to be a floor.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. There has to be a floor, and then maybe it's 25, 23, but that's it. Like, there's no more.
Yes, I agree. Like,
so. 23
is the number that they're using because if you took the square footage of the retention basin and backed it out of the 30% for that whole subdivision, it comes to 23% is the magic number for gateway. So that's why.
And
it's Michael Jordan's number.
Can we expect the development of the roundabout?
Lone Peak Lofts.
Lone Peak Lofts?
Yes.
No. I believe they're at 30%.
Okay.
Because there's has an additional residential component, and because it has a residential component, there has to be a grass area for those families. So that's what is in between that Walmart wall and the parking lot. There's kind of a big grass area where they can put picnics.
It's a crunchy one that's there?
What?
It's all dead right now.
Walmart. It's just
The grass, yeah.
No, this is on the west side of Walmart, east side of Walmart. But no, this wouldn't apply.
On the south,
it is very
on the
crunchy.
South side of Walmart. So
if you still have some commercial ads developed, this might be an opportunity.
It's very crunchy.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely a concept worth exploring and getting some specifics on.
So that's one item. The other one is a list of approved uses. And so we talk about this time and time again. And the issue I have with the list of uses is that in no way, shape, or form can it ever be exhaustive. You know, so you get something like a loop center, which is pretty standard practice for a city to have a loop center. But it's not on our list, so I'm looking at the list of approved uses as a second. The issue I'm hearing is that along 4700, you're off of the busy road, you're next to a residential neighborhood, you want to look at those uses as they, because right now it's meant to be retail. So you imagine that lot, you ask what's going on behind the parks. Well, they approached me and said, well, would the city consider an office building here? In today's environment, daring to put an office building there. But so that was, I told my friends at the planning commission and we can explore those uses. So I don't mind the concept in that lot behind Hearts, but I would have heartburn about putting a big office complex on that
the last big one
where the David Whitley Homes is. I think that we've had some interest in some forms of retail there. So I'd be hesitant to carve out.
Wasn't there an O'Reilly?
Yeah.
They walked away.
Oh.
They couldn't have a pole sign.
call AutoZone. We need
the issue with O'Reilly was, last I heard was, you're going back and forth about signage, and they kind of said, no, you can't have a pole sign. Your signs have to conform to our city code, and your colors have to, you know, be in line with what is in the commercial zone. I don't know what happened with the market. I don't feel like it's anything that the city should regret.
The interesting thing though, when you go to Highland, their neighbor, the Lehigh Smith there, their auto zone, their building conforms to what they have, but they do have the red on their sign on the monument.
Well, that's fine. I didn't have the problem. It's kind of like the Walmart, the blue on the Walmart stucco. I mean, they rebrand. The original proposal there was to come in and paint the gray, the brick gray. And as a city, we said, absolutely not. So, but we're okay with stucco being painted because A, this is your marketing, we understand that. B, it can be repainted, there's nothing permanent about it. People hate it, but.
Is there interest for lower impact retail there? I mean,
I haven't had any. That's a good question. I have not had any. And so this is also something that I think, you know, this city council planning commission, we can just punt on this one and say, you know what, with development going in across the street, with Harvey coming in, the commercial dynamics in this area are going to change. Let's just see what happens in the next year or two. That's my feeling.
Yeah, I feel like that even that storage, the storage units, they're going to change use. That's an interim use anyways, usually.
It's full.
I know, but at some point, somebody's going to want that property really bad for something, because with all these new housing units, I don't know.
Someone asked me the other day if it was going to be a Target.
Oh my gosh, I would die and just stay here forever if it was Target.
No, I agree. I think that so the prime spot for a lower density retail place would be, I think, would be attractive to be.
They can already do a lower intensity retail type use there. But I just, like I said, I kind of feel like some of the dynamics that kind of handcuffed us in the past here with, you guys have all had kids that go to junior high. Going to Mount Ridge Junior High is a headache. But all of a sudden, it's going to be a lot easier next month. So east-west traffic is going to flow a lot better. All of a sudden, you don't have, huge amounts of farmland across the street from your commercial zone, that you have actual people.
So did they make that road like this just to slow people down?
I don't know.
No, it's because of the houses and property lines.
I'm kind of more content to just sit on what we have right now and see what happens. But I'd love to hear your opinions too.
I would say the same thing.
That's my feeling. It's going to change a lot.
I've said that for the last couple of things we've approved.
And we don't know what will happen. You know, a lot of companies gave up their office space because the overhead was just a pile of paint, you know. And both my sons, they don't have office space anymore. They work in their homes. But now their companies are looking for office space. And they're going to do a hybrid.
Yeah, right.
So and they're all down at the social.
Okay. Is there any other discussion we need to have on this one then? Okay, well, on the first item, I'll come back with something, I'll work on something to bring back, and the second one, I'll just go through. We'll go on to the next item.
Number 9. House Bill 409, Municipal and County Land Use and Development Additions.
Okay, our legislature, bless their hearts. They made changes to the Land Use Development Management Act, otherwise affectionately referred to as LUDMA. But part of that code now requires cities to require a certain amount of training for planning commission members each year. It's got to be 4 hours of training. You go through. 1 hour of training has to be on the roles and duties of the planning commissioner. And then when a new planning commissioner takes office, they cannot vote or participate in the meeting until they've had that training. So there are some resources that the state is working with on putting up to cities. If you really care to go look, there's the Land Use Academy of Utah, LUAU, is what it's called. I can send you a link to it. They've started to upload some trainings. And I've talked to our attorney about it because typically we've relied on a number of resources to provide some of the trainings. Each year we already have to do the Open Public Meetings Act training, so we'll go through that song and dance. Because really, as a planning commission, there's never any reason for you to shut that door ever. We'll do an annual training on the goal and duties of the planning commission. We've had the Utah Property Rights Ombudsman come down for rigorous training on conditional uses, land use law. We have Utah League of Cities and Towns, McBrien, their land use expert, come down and do trainings in the past. So we've utilized these resources before, but it seems like every other community is going to have to do that as well. So in the past, we've organized these trainings, and we've invited other adjacent communities and planning commissions, and it's always fun to hear their comments because we can kind of clue into what issues they're facing. But some of the issues that the state code specifically outlines for training, and these aren't all required, but the ones that I felt like would maybe be more applicable would be appeals and variances, conditional use permits, exactions, impact fees, vested rights, property rights, and so on. A few others that are on there that I just don't feel are that applicable to our planning commissions, we don't really ever come up, but those are some of the ones that I felt maybe more applicable. Any questions, thoughts? So I wanted you to just be aware that this is...
So does that mean that all of us have to redo 4 hours before we can vote again?
No, I'll just run the disc on that one.
So it's the idea we would do the training as a body, but we're supposed to do it on our own?
No, I would... I think when... Because when this could be a part of the checklist that we get audited on every year, so I have to be able to say, this is when we offer the trainings, it's these meetings, and this is who attends. So, in going forward, there could be 30 minutes presentation on appeals and variances as part of a regularly scheduled meeting. And you can watch a Dodgers game or something during that time, I don't know. But we'll be offering the training.
Would you try to do like 6 a year?
Well, I'd be doing the 1 hour probably at the beginning of the year to talk about roles and duties, because when we have new planning commissioners, we typically take office in January. So that's when I probably do that one, would be in January. And then you can have open public meetings the next month. I don't know. I'll be honest, I'm not jazzed about this bill. Because 4 hours is
a lot.
It's like adding 4 more meetings. So, yeah, I got some issues with it, but we're going to comply. So. And I'm sure the more direction over time will come from the state. So there is options online training that you can go do and then verify with a certificate. They've done that in the past for special district training. Then that can count too, so you don't have to spend your time here doing that. So I'm kind of hoping that that's the direction that they go. Any questions?
I move that we adjourn.
Aye.
Sure, you're right.
Oh, sorry.